Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Been dropping a lot of the throwdowns and things like that. So, you know, we were just talking, we're like, hey, let's get back to our roots. Let's talk to the people. Let's throw some news in here. There's been a lot going on that we have kind of been glossing over the past couple of weeks. So gonna talk some news. We're gonna get into a throwdown for tonight. You guys seem to be liking those. We've been getting a lot of good feedback on that. So while you're at it, please like, subscribe, comment, hit us up, talk to us. Let us know, you know, how you're feeling about these, what kind of throwdowns you want to see, any other kind of content that you would like to see. Because, you know, we're a podcast of the people. So, Kev, what's going on, man? Talk to us.
Not bad. You know, just had a great weekend with the kids. Had another baseball tournament this weekend. I'm the head coach of my son's 10U baseball team. We're about to be 10U in the fall. We'll be 10U. So that was fun. That was a lot of fun. We had a lot of learning experiences because we're transitioning to real baseball where you get to steal and lead off and all that stuff. So that was a lot of fun.
How's that going with all the COVID stuff? Like, is anything really changed for you guys in terms of your games? I've always been wondering about that because one of my buddies is also doing like baseball stuff, and I haven't even asked him about that. Are there any major differences this year?
No, not in terms of like playing. They have some social distancing stuff going on, like where you're only allowed like 5 or 6 kids in the dugout at a time. The other kids, they've actually cleared all the bleachers out, so no parents allowed to sit on the bleachers, or they sit along the fence row past the dugout. And so that the bleachers are designed for the kids, so the extra kids go out there and sit on the bleachers that are right next to the dugout. So they sit there, and we just kind of space out a little bit. But other than that, it's pretty much the same. They don't really wear masks. Well, one of the tournaments we went to, you had to wear a mask walking in and walking out. But other than that, it's pretty much same old, same old. You know, baseball is a lot easier sport to social distance, if you will, just because you're not really touching each other that much. If you do, you're using a glove or something like that. So other than that, okay, you know, we try to keep the kids separated a little bit. We don't do high fives. After the game, we don't do the handshake. We just each dugout, they stand at the end and take their hat off and, like, you know, tip their hat to the other team. And that's pretty much it. But other than that, it's pretty much same old, same old.
That makes sense. I was thinking about today, not sports related, but if there's something positive that we can take from the COVID and the social distancing, it's personal space. Like there's nothing that annoys me more, like when I'm like standing in line, like especially if like I'm ordering food or something and I don't know the person and they're just right up behind you, like they're like analyzing your order and just like looking over your shoulder. So if I think we need to look for more silver linings to all this, and that to me is one of them. Like just keep back. Let's all just stay 6 feet away from each other at all times.
No, I agree with that. So it's been interesting. Some parents, you know, have concerns of, like most every other parent does, and you try to address them. And, you know, after we use equipment, we try to wipe it down with sanitizer and stuff like that. But it's a little bit different than what it normally has been in years past. But for the most part, it's been pretty normal. So that's good. We start our fall season actually in about 3 weeks from, 3 weeks from yesterday. So it's a lot of fun. All the kids are, we got a lot of good kids this year, so I'm pretty excited about it. But we did some recruiting and stuff like that. So we're not in a rec league. It's much more of a, it's much more of a competitive league. So like I have full control over the roster. I can bring on anybody I want and kick anybody off anybody anytime I want at any time. So yeah, it's like I'm playing Madden franchise mode over here. So I'm the head coach, I'm the skipper. So hey, you know, I make the hirings and the firings.
Just imagining you like having them run like three cones and timing 40s and like bat velocity.
Yeah, exit velocity and all this. Yeah, well, I mean that's the sport I grew up playing from kindergarten through high school. So, I absolutely love baseball. Now, I mean, now in terms of like if I had a choice to like watch or like consume that content, it's definitely football all day over baseball. But playing it and, you know, coaching it and stuff like that, still been a lot of fun, and I love it. So, like I said, that's all the sport I played growing up. So it's been cool. Like I didn't honestly think my son was actually going to get into it because there for a while, because he really wasn't into sports until about five or six, and it's like all of a sudden one day he comes on and like asks me about football, and I'm like, so I start talking about it, and like he watched every game since. And then he came home kind of the same thing. He was at a buddy's house. It was like January too, and he was like, hey, I played baseball today at my buddy's house. I'm like, it was like 30 degrees outside. I'm like, okay, did you like? He's like, yeah, can I play baseball this year? And I'm like, sure. So we signed him up, and the coach for the two coaches for that team were fucking horrible, like just like straight horrible. They literally, all they did every practice was just hit grounders to the infielders, and that was it. Didn't work on anything else. Nothing. They would go to the batting cages every once in a while. I'm like, this is not how a team is ran whatsoever. So by the fall, the head coaches had like a falling out, and they kind of kept getting into it and stuff like that. And I was like a base coach or whatever, just kind of like a helper, assistant coach. It just kept going downhill. Eventually, they kicked both the coaches out. The parents did, because the parents were like, either we're walking or you guys are leaving, and we want Kevin to be the head coach. And so I was like, all right, if you guys want, sure, I guess I'll do it. And so I did it, and I've been the coach since. So
that's my kid's going to be 2 in November. And we just got him like one of those like plastic, you know what I mean, those massive bat kind of like T-ball set things. And we actually just set it up in the living room. And it's been like kind of cool to like see him actually be able to like grab a bat. Cause like at first, whenever we got it, he would just like take one hand and just like and Flintstone swing it. Or you would put the ball on top of the tee, he would just come over and smack it off with his hand. But it's been kind of cool to see him actually like, we'll put the ball up there and he'll hold it and he'll actually like swing at it. We'll count down from 3 and shit. So that's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it goes by really fast too. So enjoy the hell out of it, because like it's crazy because I'm thinking about him. I'm like, man, we're in 10U. Like, you know, 4 years from now, he's going to be like, you know, you're getting close to the middle school age, and you're talking about, you know, some middle schools who have baseball teams, stuff like that. So things are get a little bit different and everything else on how and when and how they play and everything else. So I just say try to enjoy the hell out of it while you can, because it goes by so fast.
Yeah, it's something I'm trying to do more of, especially with like all the COVID stuff. And I've just noticed that I started doing like kind of like, oh, I can't wait until he can do this. Can't wait till he can do that. Now I'm just like, holy shit, he's going to be 2 already. Like I should probably
slow down.
Pushing this away. Yeah,
I'm telling you, because like my like I said, my son turns 10 in next May, and I'm like, man. And because, yeah, that's what everybody does. You're like, man, I can't wait till he can walk. You know, so, you know, you have to carry him everywhere. Oh, I can't wait till he can do this. I can't wait till he can get up and get his own food, or, you know, whatever, like dumb shit, right? But then you look back at it and you're like, yeah, now it's so far past. Like, it's like, man, it sucks. Like, you know, it goes by so fast. And it's like I said, like he's already halfway to being, going to college. And so I trying to enjoy it more, and, you know, I don't know if I've said this on the pod or not, but I do have another one coming in the next month or so. So,
Yeah,
this one I'm going to try to enjoy, you know, try to slow it down a little bit more and just kind of enjoy it instead of, you know, hoping for the future event.
Yeah, I told my wife I don't know about number 2. I think I'm good with 1.
Good luck. Good luck with that. How old are you?
32.
Oh, see, I thought you were always a lot younger. I don't think I've ever asked you how old you are. Yeah, I thought you were a lot younger.
Well, it's because I look like I'm 14.
That's true. Yeah, I would have. I thought you were like 26, 27.
I wish.
So you're only a couple years younger than me.
How old are you?
35.
We're just finding out a bunch of stuff about each other.
I know.
We've been podcasting and writing together for 2 years now. We're just like, oh, wait, how old are you? What's your favorite color? All right, so that'll wrap up our little family baseball hour here. We do want to get into some news and notes. There is one thing that we would kind of we would be remiss if we did not touch upon. We know that everyone's been talking about the Bobby Silvester Fantasy Pros like in mess. I guess is the lightest way of putting it. So we would be doing an injustice. Like we know that everyone's kind of talked about it, but we also feel like we need to say our piece on the whole thing as well. So Kev, I know you had something you wanted to talk about, so I'll let you take this one.
Yeah. I mean, just, I guess the backstory on it too, is that people don't know what we're talking about. So basically if you're familiar with Bobby Silvester, he's a podcaster for Fantasy Pros. He apparently was sliding into females' DMs and saying some pretty nasty shit to them. When it first came out, it was a video he recorded of himself behind a Fantasy Pros backdrop at that. Like you're just a moron for doing it anyways. And then you do it in front of a Fantasy Pros, you know, your backdrop, and said some dumb shit to her. And that kind of came out. And I knew at that moment, I was like, there's no way this is the only time he's ever done something like this. And he, sure enough, he had reached out to another female back in February and said some stuff, some really nasty stuff. I'm not going to repeat it, but so just shit you shouldn't be saying to any female whatsoever. So that's what kind of when everything exploded. I mean, it got so big. I mean, it wasn't just a Twitter thing. It was, you know, it was on Fantasy Reddit. It was on Facebook. Like, I mean, it blew up everywhere. Of course, he gave out the canned apology bullshit response of, you know, of, oh, I'm going to do better. I need to learn. Like, no, motherfucker, you're a piece of shit. Like, I'm sorry. You know, and like I listened to like the Fantasy Pros because I was curious if they were going to address it in their news podcast, and they did. And you know, Mike, you know, Tagler, I think he's a really nice guy. Like I can't really say anything bad about him, but I felt like he kind of let him off the hook a little bit with his, oh, he's like a little brother to me. I didn't know this, you know, blah blah blah. I'm like, no, fuck that. Like, you know, he's no little brother to you. He's a fucking piece of shit. Like, you don't do that to females. I've seen it one too many times in the fantasy community where this happens to females. People think that it's okay. And most of the time, the females don't say anything about it. They just let it go, and it's not okay. Like, we should have more females in this industry, not because just because they're females, but because they're capable of doing the same things we do. And I've seen it. Like, I've seen it come through with Jen, who, yeah, you know, Jen Smith, who used to work for, or who used to write for TFA, and, you know, is taking a little bit of a leave of absence or whatever. She's excellent, excellent, hardworking, researches her ass off, you know, jumps on the pod. You know, we have great chemistry together. We're on the pod, does excellent work. Samantha Holt, who's now with Fantasy Focus, she came through TFA. Another person who's really hardworking, busts her ass. You have Taylor Cannavari, who now is Osmo, who came through TFA, who is super witty. I wish I could be half as witty as she is on Twitter. And excellent, excellent analyst. You have, you know, other people. Katie, who also came through TFA, who's now doing some other stuff. She's an excellent, I mean, does excellent work. Just other people, Lauren Carpenter, and, you know, the Ball Blast, you know, girls that have their own website and their own podcast that do their thing, and Liz Loza. And I mean, there's the list goes on. There's so many talented females in the space that I know that dudes do this, or they slide in their DMs and they say this nasty shit to them, or they try to flirt and all stuff. Like, this isn't fucking fantasy Tinder, bro. Like, don't be doing that shit. Like, it's stupid. Like, if you want to talk fantasy, you want to talk about whatever, like what we do, fine, do that. But if you wouldn't want someone to do it to your sister or your daughter or your mother, then don't do it to them. And that's what irritates me, because they shouldn't have to deal with this bullshit I don't have to deal with that. Like, if somebody did it to me, I'd tell them to get the fuck off, like, you know, fuck you, and like we'd move on, right? But to a female, like, a lot of times they're not going to say anything. They're just going to move on, and they'll probably block you or not accept it, whatever. But that shouldn't be how it is. It shouldn't happen ever. Like I said, like, if you wouldn't do it to your mom, your sister, your daughter, your wife, then you shouldn't do it to anybody. You shouldn't do it to any other female. They don't deserve it. If you do, you're a piece of shit in my book. I don't care. I don't care if people unfollow me. I don't care if people like, or if they think that what I'm saying is over the line. I don't care. because there's a certain line that you cross and don't. I try to be very smart with my words when it comes to females on Twitter, like even like joking about certain, you know, certain stuff I won't do just because I feel like that's crossing a line. I feel like that's how it should be for everybody. They should be able to come on here, say their takes and, you know, do whatever they want to do. And, you know, we can criticize them. We can, you know, like we would any other fantasy analyst and stuff like that. Like they're just our equal. We're not any better. They're not any better than us. And that's how it should be. And so, I don't know. It just really fucking pissed me off when I saw it, especially when he sent out his apology. And of course I quote tweeted it and, you know, basically told him to go fuck himself. I don't give a shit about your stupid apology. Like it was completely bullshit. He only apologized because he got exposed. That was it. So yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah, man, I totally agree. And like you were touching on, it's a shame that they have to be, not have to be, but they are subjected to that far too often. And then the other thing, you know, when they're like you said, the ball blast girls who are just putting out content, seems like every single hour, always super active on Twitter. And then, you know, inevitably you have someone in there like, oh, shut up, stick to cooking. Like, dude, shut the fuck, like, I swear to God, there are like all the females you just rattled off. There are a lot of them I would rather sit down and talk fantasy football over some of the douchers in my home leagues who think they know what they're talking about, but they wouldn't be able to go toe to toe with Lauren or Sam or, you know what I mean, Katie, anyone like that. Like I would put those girls that we've been lucky enough to have on the pod and interact with and, you know, be able to talk to on more than one occasion up against some of the guys in my home league. So if you feel like you have to, oh, she's a female and she's here, so I mean, obviously you want me, right? Like, you're a douche. Just back the fuck off, shut up. And if you feel like you need to be like, well, I'm a man and only men play football, so only men can talk about football, you're an insecure little bitch.
Nailed it. That's exactly how I feel. It's 100% the truth. So, well, two things on that, really. One is August 31st, we are going to have a ladies' night here. And we are, so far, I know for sure we're going to have Lauren Carpenter, who we've mentioned. And I believe Sam Holt's going to come on. I tried to get Jen. She's going to be on vacation. But we're going to see who else we can get. We're going to have a little ladies' night at the TFA. And because we should be supporting them. And because they put out good work. Not because they're female, but because they crush the content game. Yes. So we're going to have them on. And also, if you are a female that listens to this, because like I said, we should have more female analysts, because there should be, and they shouldn't be afraid of being talked to like that or treated like that. Our door is always open. So you want to, you know, reach out to me on Twitter at FantasyRat13 or at FF_authority, or you can reach out to Cody at CKutzerFF, and we will bring you right in. And you know, let's get some more females in this game, because there should be, and there's no space for that. So I thought this is something that we needed to say. It should be said. We shouldn't be afraid to say it, because we, you know, you want to be politically correct and everything else to not piss people off. And if we did, I didn't want you to listen to the podcast anyways, because, you know, I don't got room for all those people. So you want to unsubscribe because of what we said? I don't care. Like, bye Felicia.
Yeah, absolutely. If that's something that's going to make you unsubscribe or unfollow, like, you're doing us a favor. We probably didn't give a shit about you anyway, to be completely honest. Yeah. And if you are one of those people, at least out yourself. Don't be a little slime bag and just like weasel your way out. Let it be known. If you're going to be a scumbag, just let it be known. Say, hey, I didn't like what you guys said, so I unsubscribed. Good.
And, you know, not to segue from that, but speaking of another scumbag, Darius Geis, who now is out of the league, because apparently he is, a felony strangulation charge, I believe is what it is.
Yeah, I think there were like three different charges. Like maybe there were four charges, three with something else, but there was a felony strangulation charge.
Yeah.
Scumbag. So,
yeah. I mean, of course, we need to wait until all the news comes out and figure out exactly what happened. But as of right now, it's not looking good. He's obviously he was cut immediately, which, of course, when you're the Washington football team, you know, with everything else that's gone on, there was no chance that they were going to let that happen for very long. So Darius Geis has been cut. He is gone. And Adrian Peterson, the ageless wonder, continues to rise up the rankings, I guess. So basically, it comes down to this. Also, if you want more in-depth on this, because we're not going to spend a ton of time on Darius Geis and the situation here in Washington, but we do have a video out on our YouTube channel. I think it was, over the weekend. So it's about a four-minute video. It goes in-depth, kind of talks through all this more in-depth. So if you want to check that out, go check out the YouTube channel. We'd really appreciate it. But so you basically have Adrian Peterson, which I think that he's probably going to be the lead back. I think most people would understand, but I don't think it's going to be your typical lead back. I think somebody that probably just gets the early down work, goal line work, stuff like that. And then you're going to have Bryce Love, who came from Stanford. He did not play last year. And then we have Antonio Gibson, who was drafted this year, who is best comparable to Joe Mixon. However, he does not have the touches and the collegiate career that Joe Mixon does. He is an explosive athlete, super efficient. I think he broke 33 tackles or something like that, or I can't remember what it was off the top of my head. I don't have it pulled up, but crazy efficient. Was used mostly as a wide receiver. Only had 33 career touches, I believe. And so anyways, where are you at on this situation? Like, I kind of have an idea of where you're going to go with this, but I know you're an Antonio Gibson truther. You love Antonio Gibson. I do too. However, for this 1 year for redraft, would you rather have Bryce Love? Do you think that he's somebody, especially that even though he was hurt last year, he's been around the program, he's seen everything, you know, he's kind of been there and knows, I guess, a little bit. Obviously, we have a new head coach with Ron Rivera, so that's a little bit different. So it's not like, the previous coaching staff is still there, but he has been in the building. Obviously, Antonio Gibson is the incumbent, who is obviously pretty raw at this point because hasn't had a lot of opportunity. But where do you fall on this?
Especially for like you said, I know you said for this year, but for Dynasty, I think I had him as RB7 right behind Vaughn. If he definitely is raw, there's absolutely a projection if you're going to try. I don't foresee him sliding into a workhorse role, especially right off the bat. Like, there's still so much he has to learn. Like you said, he had 33 carries at Memphis. Yeah, I think it was like 38 catches. He was involved in the kick return game and on special teams. But he is just dripping with upside. He has a size, he has a speed, like you said, best comparable to Joe Mixon. Like, he has, I think he ran a sub 4.4. I think he ran like a 4.39 at like 228, 230 pounds. So if he can put that all together and he can show Rivera and that coaching staff, because this is a brand new coaching staff. So they're not going in there with ties to anybody. Like, they're not going in there with, well, you know, we should get this guy touches. I do think that, even Peyton Barber, I think he's going to be involved to some extent. I think in terms of touches and carries, it wouldn't surprise me if Adrian Peterson just defies all odds again and ends up leading this team in carries for this year. So if you're going to go with someone, I probably should have looked up and seen where he is going in ADP currently. Antonio Gibson, because I'm sure he's going to be soaring up draft boards.
Well, last I looked, I think he's still undrafted. I don't think he's been on a lot of people's radar. It's going to change over the next week. It's certainly going to change dramatically. It might have changed already, but I know before this he wasn't. Adrian Peterson really wasn't on many people's radars either, obviously, for the sake of because Darius Geis was there.
Antonio Gibson is currently going at 901 according to Fantasy Football Calculator.
Woo! Coming in hot.
So
it has changed. Yeah, because he was going undrafted. If he was being drafted, it was like the 14th, 15th round prior to this. So.
That did not take long.
I think that is way too high. Antonio Gibson.
AP is going at 12-11.
That is insane. So the guy who's going to lead the backfield likely in touches is actually going still in the 12th round, and Antonio Gibson now is going in the 9th. I like Antonio Gibson a lot. Like I said, I think you're right. I think he has massive upside. But Adrian Peterson is more than likely going to lead this backfield in touches. I think that Antonio Gibson can certainly carve out an impressive role as a pass catcher. And I think I think I would feel more comfortable if I could get him in the 11th round, 10th, 11th round. I think he should be going around where Alexander Mattison and Tony Pollard and Duke Johnson and all those guys should go. Because I do think that he can certainly carve out a role, because we know Adrian Peterson isn't going to be the pass catcher here whatsoever. And I think there's some credence to say that, well, Ron Rivera knows how to use this. He just saw Christian McCaffrey and what they were able to do. Not that Antonio Gibson is Christian McCaffrey, because certainly they're not. I mean, Christian McCaffrey was a well-established, running back coming out of college, whereas obviously Antonio Gibson's not, but so I do think we'll get some correction here. I think that is people overvaluing it. The hype came out. Everybody's hyping Antonio Gibson. People start drafting when mock drafts much earlier. I think it'll correct itself back out, and we'll probably see Adrian Peterson move up to where probably, like I said, I think probably eighth, ninth round, probably where Antonio Gibson's going now, and then we'll probably see Antonio Gibson fall back a little bit. But I know there's some people that are touting Love. I don't think so. I mean, I think the only way that he would get run, I think it would have to take Adrian Peterson getting hurt, and then I think then that could be a possibility to where he still then he could become a thing. But Peyton Barber's still there as well. I don't know why Peyton Barber's terrible, but regardless of that, I think Antonio Gibson's a fine guy if you can get in the 11th, 12th round, and that's where I would want to take him. And if he's going any sooner, if he's going in the 9th round, I'm probably out on that. Unless we get all this indication that they're going to go with Antonio Gibson and he's going to get much more opportunities than what we think, then I would be much more interested.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting too. You were talking about his pass catching role. Not only is Adrian Peterson not the pass catcher, nor has he been really throughout his career at all, but that pass catching depth chart for Washington is pretty slim. So the only thing that concerns me is, like, I hope they don't put him into a gadgety kind of role, because I really do believe that he could be maybe not even necessary.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic. So now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Necessarily a workhorse back, but someone who's more than capable of handling, obviously with his size, but I'm just talking from a skill standpoint. Someone that you can hand the ball off 10 times a game, plus get another 4 or 5 targets. You know what I mean? I think with his athleticism and his skill set, he'd be more than capable enough to turn those into efficient yards and efficient touches. So that's kind of where I'm sitting with Antonio Gibson. Like, I'm surprised that he jumped up into the 9th. Like, he's going ahead of, so right now he is tied with Emmanuel Sanders at 901. 902 is Alexander Mattison. Then you have Josh Allen, Kerryon Johnson, C.D. Lamb. San Francisco's defense coming in hot and heavy at 906. Zach Moss, Carson Wentz, Keyshawn Vaughn, Darius Slayton, Henry Ruggs, and then jumps to the 10th round after that. So that's kind of in the area that he is going. The running back that is going before him is Latavius Murray at 811. So that kind of gives you an idea of the range of where Antonio Gibson has jumped up to.
Yeah, that's jumped the shark big time. So, yeah. So I think that's pretty much, I think we're pretty much in agreement on that. And then the last piece of news we had was Lamar Miller signed with the Patriots today on a 1-year deal. I think this says more about Sony Michel and his health than it does anything. You know, of all running backs you bring in Lamar Miller, but hey, I mean, I guess they impressed him enough. He's obviously somebody that's capable of doing both. He is a capable pass catcher. He is coming off an ACL injury that he suffered last year. It says he's completely healthy, so that is something that should be monitored. But Sonny Michel, I think we can all intents and purposes pretty much say that he was a bust, especially as a first round pick for New England. The guy just really hasn't been good. He's never really been able to stay healthy. I think he had the 1 year with a little bit of production, but overall, like, he hasn't really been very good and not somebody that I'm overly excited about. So he was already going like 8th round, something like that. Now with Lamar Miller being signed, like, that doesn't excite me either in this offense. So I think I would still probably prefer James White a little bit as if I was going to take a New England running back, but I'm pretty much out on the entire New England backfield.
Yeah, it's gross. And per usual, the New England backfield is something you just crumble up your papers and just throw them in the air, because that's although I have been a Lamar Miller fanboy for a while, so like I didn't even know this news went down until like 5 minutes before we started recording. Kev told me, and I was just like, oh really? Well, Lamar's back in town. But who knows? I mean, that depth chart was ugly, so it makes sense that they would bring in somebody like Lamar Miller. Obviously, Sony Michel had all the opportunity in the world last year and did not do much, to say the least. So I think this signing makes sense for them.
And how did they miss the opportunity to bring in Jeremy Hill back? Because Jeremy Hill was cut from Oakland or from Las Vegas this past week after Devontae Booker. You know, they could have re-signed the Super Bowl champion. I mean, he won a Super Bowl with New England, right? The year they won the Super Bowl. Now, he got hurt in like week one, but he was on the roster and he's a Super Bowl champion. They could have brought him back, had a victory tour, you know. So is life. They brought in Lamar Miller. That's, I guess, what you got to need to know about Jeremy Hill at this point of his career. But anyways, I think that is there any other news? I think that's pretty much it. It's nice though right now. We're starting to get some trickle from the training camp, starting to get some news, getting a little bit more news about what's happening. So hopefully it continues, because we're not going to get a preseason. And now it sounds like there's going to be no college football, which now the NFL is talking about playing games Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The NFL is going to maximize the shit out of this. If they're just sitting there waiting, let's just rubbing their hands together like, yes, no college football. Let there be no college football, because we are going to take this bitch over. Especially once we get to like October, November time frame, when all these other sports are over, the NFL is just going to crush.
I mean, the only other thing that I'll add in here that should be stated is that Alan Lazard is, quote, the overwhelming favorite to be the number two receiver opposite Devontae Adams. So, I mean, I think we gotta drop that in there.
The shiniest of all turds, I guess. So, yeah,
it's shiny. I'll pick it up. I mean, I'll be tricked.
Speaking of Devontae Adams, let's have us a throwdown, shall we?
Oh, we shall. So tonight we're going to be throwing down on the top two receivers that are going in your 2020 drafts, and that is Michael Thomas and Devontae Adams. According to 4-for-4's ADP, Michael Thomas is wide receiver one, coming off boards at 105, and then Devontae Adams is coming off at wide receiver two at 108. So basically why we wanted to do this one is because those are your top two receiver options, right? If all these running backs are flying off the board and you don't want to, you know, maybe you think it's too early to take Henry or Cook, or, you know, you don't want to reach on Mixon or someone like Miles Sanders, who we are high on, which, by the way, you can check out all of the other throwdown videos we've done on across our podcast and on the YouTube channel as well. Seems like you guys are loving the Mixon and Sanders throwdown. Maybe that's a choice that you're having to make. But anyway, between Michael Thomas and Devontae Adams, those are the two receivers you're going to be looking at. Tyreek Hill's going third. You have Julio Jones going as the fourth receiver off the board. So we wanted to kind of get this out of the way to talk about these two receivers. I'm going to be arguing for one, Michael Thomas. Kev, I'm going to give you the floor. You are going to be arguing for Devontae Adams. So why are you taking Devontae Adams over Michael Thomas if faced with that decision in drafts?
First, before you do, if you could be so kind to please click that like button, it really helps us in our helps YouTube see the video. And also hit that subscribe button. Really helps us grow. We're really trying to grind this thing out. We really appreciate all the support we're getting from everybody. We're really starting to see positive growth. So if you can just hit that subscribe button, we'll be forever in your debt. And we promise to win you a championship this year. So anyways, Devontae Adams, let's go. So this is easy for me, right? One, listen, Michael Thomas is a beast. There is no doubt. And Devontae Adams and Michael Thomas are very similar players. They both, their fantasy production is tied directly to how many targets they're going to get. If they lose targets, they are certainly going to lose production, right, in terms of fantasy points. And now you may say, Kevin, yeah, but that's obvious. That happens with every fantasy player. Not so fast, my friend. We have guys like Tyreek Hill, who can crush, who was wide receiver two in 2018 on 137 targets, where Devontae Adams, Michael Thomas, they are typically guys that need 170, 180 targets for them to really maximize their floor or maximize their ceiling, right? because they are not field stretchers. They are not somebody that's going to have a high yard per or yard per target average, and that is the problem. However, that is what I love so much about Devontae Adams this year. Devontae Adams currently right now, he averaged 10.6 targets per game, 30.3 target share, which was third best in the league, was targeted on 29% of his routes, 17.6 fantasy points per game, 82 receptions, 997 yards, 5 touchdowns, 16 red zone receptions, was third best. Also led the league with 45% target rate in the red zone, 12th in yards after the catch, 12 in yards per reception, 66th, his 12 point yards per reception was 66, and he was 2.8 yards per pass route, which was fifth, sixth in fantasy points per pass route. So the positives for him is they've added no competition this offseason. We were all waiting for it. Oh, we were all like, okay, who are they going to draft here in the first round? So many wide receivers. Are they going to take Denzel Mims? Were they going to try to trade up and get like a Jalen Reagor? You know, they had to pair somebody for Aaron Rodgers because his team was not very far away from a Super Bowl, right? Aaron Rodgers is declining. He's on the backside of his career. They're going to have to add some pieces here so he can finally cook again, because right now it was Alan Lazard, Marcus Valdez-Scantling, Geronimo Allison left to the Lions. You know, Equanimeous St. Brown, who got hurt last year, is still there. Like, it is a hodgepodge group of players. So we knew that they were going to add a wide receiver, except for, spoiler alert, they didn't. They added fucking, you know, a quarterback, Jordan Love, in the first round, which everybody was like, what are they doing? And then on top of that, they come back and add A.J. Dillon in the second round.
Hold my beer. Watch this.
Yes, which was fucking awful. And so now Devontae Adams is in line for, book it, as long as he stays healthy, 180 targets. Could go more. He is the only target that Aaron Rodgers has. He doesn't really have a tight end. Jay Sternberger, which we kind of like as maybe a late-round guy, but not somebody that I'm anticipating to have a huge role. Aaron Jones is certainly going to get targets out of the backfield, but Devontae Adams is going to get peppered with target. And so for me, I think he certainly can maintain that 30% target share that he saw last year. I have questions about Michael Thomas. Obviously, he was the wide receiver one last year. He's going to have some regression. I'm not calling for a ton, but he's going to have a little bit. We get Alvin Kamara back completely healthy this year, which he was hurt most of all of last year, which is really what hurt his production. He's super involved in the passing game. I think, you know, they added Emmanuel Sanders as well, which I think could take a little bit away from his pie. I'm not calling for some massive drop off in targets. I think he probably ends up somewhere maybe 150, 160 range. That's still fantastic. But if I'm taking and I'm wanting to just plant my flag on a player that I feel 100% confident in, is going to be Devontae Adams, or probably Tyreek Hill for me, were the two guys that I would really want. But Devontae Adams is just a slam dunk. There's just no way that I can see it. He has the seventh most PPR points per game since 2014. He's only four receivers last year saw 20% of their team's total targets and over 90% of their games. The list was Michael Thomas, DeAndre Hopkins, Allen Robinson, and then obviously Devontae Adams. He was also fourth in slot yards per route run. So there's so many things here to like about Devontae Adams' profile. So that's what I love about so much about him, and that's pretty much all I got.
So with I can't even say anything disparaging about Devontae Adams, because if I end up with him as like my consolation prize, so to speak, you know, and I don't get Michael Thomas, like, I'm fine with that. But between the two, I'm taking Michael Thomas 8 times out of 10, honestly. I mean, you're looking at a guy who – so the thing with Devontae Adams is he needs those targets. You were talking about, you know, guys who are going to fall off if they go from the 180 to the 140. We've seen Michael Thomas be a top end wide receiver one with 140 targets up until last year. I think he had like, what it was like 180, 170, something like that. But the 2 years prior to, he had less than 150. I think he was around like 149 and like 147 those 2 years. Finished wide receiver seven and wide receiver five those years. His rookie year, he only had 121 targets, and he finished as wide receiver 11. We saw he was still able to produce without Drew Brees at the helm. Obviously, we want Drew Brees throwing him the ball because he's one of the most accurate quarterbacks we've seen possibly ever. So with the addition of Emmanuel Sanders, that's the only guy that they brought in on the Saints. I mean, I guess if you want to talk about Troutman, but I still think that's going to be Jared Cook running the tight end one position this year. I think Troutman's still 2-3 years out. but even with the addition of Manuel Sanders, you want to bring Michael Thomas's targets back down to like that 140 range. That is completely fine with me, because the only thing I think you could say for going against Michael Thomas is the targets coming down, and we've seen the decline in Drew Brees in terms of his overall passing attempts over the past several years. But in 2018, Drew Brees threw less than 500 times, and Michael Thomas still saw nearly 150 targets. I don't think that he throws that few times again this year, especially considering the Saints have the 10th most difficult schedule according to Sharp Football Stats, which, again, you always have to take that with a grain of salt. But maybe we see the targets tick up and they aren't able to hand the ball off as much as they want to in this offense. But Michael Thomas is just going to be – he has one of the highest ceiling and highest floor combinations, which is typically something you don't get in with your fantasy players. Normally, you have to take away from one of those. You either have the really high floor with the low ceiling, or you have the high ceiling and the low floor. But Michael Thomas gives you both. He is one of the safest first-round picks I think you can make. If you look at his – four-year average in terms of what he's done production-wise, it's absolutely ridiculous. You're looking at 117 catches, almost 1,400 yards, and 8 touchdowns, just as an average over 4 years, and nothing really blew up for him up until this year. He's just been super steady, and like I said, it's nothing really against Devontae Adams, because if I end up having to take him as my second wide receiver off the board, I'm fine with that, but I definitely want Michael Thomas over Devontae Adams. Like I said, eight times out of 10.
Yeah, I don't hate that. And it's like I said, you look at Michael Thomas, he was 70th in yards per reception last year at 11.6. His yards per target was 9.3, which was 21st, which is still not good. And his average target distance was 8.3, which was 89th in the league. So that is the only thing that concerns me a little bit. If, like I said, if he loses any significant targets, that's going to be a problem. Obviously, his 149 receptions is likely to come down a little bit. He still had 1,700 yards, 9 touchdowns on 149 receptions. The dude's still going to be a beast. He only had 9 deep targets, which was 72nd in the league. Hate that as well. But I do think we probably see a little bit of regression. Not much. Like I said, if you want to take him as your number one, so be it. I would take Devontae Adams. If I had the 105, I would not be taking Michael Thomas. I would much rather go running back there, like Dalvin Cook, who probably will be on the board, or Alvin Kamara, before I wanted to take Michael Thomas. Now, if I'm sitting on the board at 108 and 109, I'd feel much more confident taking Devontae Adams at that point than I'm wanting to take a wide receiver at 105. So that's kind of my only complaint. Like I said, I think we're splitting hairs a little bit, but I would prefer, if I was sitting on the draft, I would probably always take Devontae Adams over Michael Thomas, just because I think that I could project a much higher ceiling in terms of what I believe his target share is going to be in this offense, because there is literally nobody. The one aspect I will say that is a positive for Michael Thomas is if something were to happen to Drew Brees, he's got fucking Jameis Winston ready and waiting to be our QB1, and we're all just hyped about having Jameis Winston back in the league. So there is that. But other than that, like I said, I think you can't really go wrong with Devontae Adams or Michael Thomas. But I lean towards Devontae Adams just because I just think there's zero competition. Should easily see 170 targets in this offense.
Yeah, you're not going to get me to disagree about that at all. But I just think when it comes to, like I said, even if his targets dropped down like that 140 range, we still saw him finish as wide receiver 7 and wide receiver 5 on like that 147 to 149 range. Whenever you have a quarterback like Drew Brees, who's going to complete 70% of his passes, and Michael Thomas is going to have like an 86% catch rate, do we want them to be deeper targets? Yes, because that's going to lend itself to more fantasy points. But if he ends up being a compiler of sorts, like your top end Jarvis Landry, almost, like, again, if he catches 120 balls for 1,300 yards and another 8 touchdowns or something like that, like, you're not gonna hear me complain about that at all. But I do believe
you wouldn't be upset about that, though, because if he finishes, say, wide receiver 7 or 8, which isn't terrible, he still finishes wide receiver 1 for you, but you spent 105 draft capital on him, like, that's not really what you're looking for. Like, he's not hitting value at that point. He's not killing you necessarily, but he's not giving you what you're necessarily looking for, because then he drops down. Because I mean, he was 23 fantasy points per game last year, which was elite. Like, he was well above everybody else, and that's what made him so elite last year. If he drops down to like wide receiver 7, where he's giving you like 18 fantasy points per week, and then you look at those, that running back that's there at let's say Dalvin Cook or Alvin Kamara, and then 21, 22 fantasy points. I mean, that's a 3 or 4 point a week difference in terms of at that draft slot, right? And so I think that for me is what sours me away from Michael Thomas a little bit. Not that I think Michael Thomas is going to have some massive drop off or anything like that, but I do think we do see a regression, and I think it's going to be enough to where at 105, at his current ADP, that I think that makes him somebody that I'm going to avoid. Like, I'll have 0 Michael Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, that's a different discussion if we want to get into what to do with that 105 slot. You know what I mean? But whenever we're looking at receivers, like, this is the decision you're going to be making. You're going to be like, for the most part, you might get a couple who think that, you know, Julio Jones is going to ball out this year. I mean, we're definitely on that train, but maybe not as wide receiver 1 off the board. But this is more than likely, if you are like, all right, I'm not going to, you know, because there's also a chance that in your home leagues, you might be taking your first receiver at like 8 overall. You know what I mean? Like, these running backs are just flying off of boards, and that's not going to stop anytime between now and then. The 105 spot, you know, we can definitely debate that, but for our throwdown purposes, whenever we're looking at Michael Thomas and Davante Adams, I'm going with Michael Thomas, just because if Adams doesn't get the double-digit touchdowns that he's had, like, there's, which, I mean, obviously well within his range of outcomes. He's had, what, like 10, 12, 13 over the past couple of years. But if he doesn't get those and he's not paired with the efficient Aaron Rodgers, because like you said, he's been sliding off the past couple of years, that could hurt him as well if he's not getting those touchdowns to go along with all those targets.
I mean, true. I mean, it should be said that Davante Adams was also hurt last year, only played in 12 games. The year before, he played in 15 games where he had 13 touchdowns for almost 1,400 yards, 111 touchdowns
that year, I think.
Yeah, and 21.8 fantasy points per game, yeah, which was first in the league. So, and he did that off of 169 targets. So, but he's much more similar, not as bad, at least, as what Michael Thomas was. That's what, you know, kind of the joke about Michael Thomas is he's just a slant guy. Just, he just runs slants the entire game. In 2018, Davante Adams was 12.5 yards per reception, which was 62nd, which is still not good. 8.2 yards per target, which was 46th in that same year. And he had 11.7 average target distance, which was 51st. So these guys are very similar. Neither one of them are, you know, get a lot of deep targets. And that's an issue, because they're not somebody that's going to be able – they have to get the volume. If they do not get the volume, it is going to kill them – or not kill them, but that's when you're going to have much less – they're always going to be safe. Their floor is always going to be fine, but that top-end, high-end ceiling, especially if you're taking them in the first round, because that's kind of what you're looking for, because there's going to be multiple running backs that give you over 20 fantasy points per game. And if these guys drop off, and let's say wide receiver 7 or 8, 9, that they're still a wide receiver 1, but they're not getting that top-end value that you're looking for, because now you're passing on that running back that you could have had there. Let's say Miles Sanders, who finishes the top 3 running back, gets you 22, 23 fantasy points per game. And then, you know, you're not happy about that, because you passed on, you know, somebody like that versus taking him. So both these guys are very similar in terms of they need targets. If they do not get their targets, we are in trouble, compared to a guy like Julio Jones or Tyreek Hill, who live off uber efficient. Obviously, Julio Jones gets far more target volume than what Tyreek Hill does. Maybe we should do a Tyreek Hill versus Julio Jones debate, because I think that would be an interesting one as well. But with that, that's pretty much all I got.
That's all I have as well, man. We appreciate you guys listening in. If you're watching this on YouTube, again, please hit that subscribe button. If you're listening across whatever platform you're listening to on your podcast platforms, subscribe on there. Reach out to us on Twitter, on Instagram. We are basically everywhere. We are trying to go wherever you guys are to make your content life easier. We're just trying to go where you are. That way you don't have to go to 18 different spots. You can get it wherever you're at, scrolling through your feed. So we appreciate all the feedback. like, subscribe, do all that stuff. You know, reach out to us on Twitter. Let's get some conversation going. Let us know if there's a throwdown you want to see us do. And then most importantly, at Kev at FantasyRap13, let him know why he is wrong. And we'll talk to you guys soon.
Greg is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.